This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Before we get into today's source, I do want to note that there is this ongoing developing story in Boston with the two explosions that happened at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, where there are fatalities, there are injured. Facts continue to develop. If there is new, or if there are new developments, or if there's breaking news that NPR provides, we will go to that and keep you updated on that developing story. But for right now, we're going to go with the program that we had planned for you here on The Source today. The Boy Kings of Texas, a memoir that lays bare a coming of age in South Texas border region, author Domingo Martinez. It's a book that's painful, shocking, heartbreaking, and hilarious. It's written in a way that it feels like a Martinez is sitting right across from you in a bar telling you these stories over a few beers. The book is a finalist for the National Book Award. It now the Hollywood rights have been bought by Selma Hayek. There's a lot in this book. It tells a story that's not that uncommon in South Texas, but really it's been an untold story. And we invite you to join our conversation. Give us a call at 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. You could also go to our comments section on our website at tpr.org and send us a tweet on Twitter. Domingo Martinez, author of Boy Kings of Texas. Welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Now, hilarious. Congratulations on this fantastic book. And I know from checking out national media that have covered your book, people are like stunned. They feel like this is a story that took place on another planet. They can't believe that this something like this happens in the modern era and actually in the United States.
Well, growing up, I always felt that Brownsville was pretty much neglected. Well, not just Brownsville, but areas like south of like Corpus Christi. And I remember looking upon any type of media for any indication or any attention that we would get. And say if like even San Antonio showed up in the news, our immediate response was like, oh my God, they just mentioned San Antonio. You know, so we felt like we were finally a part of the United States at that point. But other than that, we're completely neglected.
Well, it's an exotic location. And I think that also is one of the attractions of your book. You do feel that it's this strange foreign place, but yet it is also not that he's still part of us.
That's correct. It's, you know, geopolitically, it's still a part of the United States. But, you know, Brownsville and a little stretch of the area north of that kind of really likes being sort of this sort of netherland, this netherworld between both Mexico and Texas. And it's like, seriously, I feel a tangible sense of like time standing still every time I go down there. And and even, you know, today when I think the last time I was down there was November, and it just felt like you moved into a different zone, like an interzone, right, between the two.
Well, it's the border region, which feels almost like not part of Mexico,
right,
not part of the United States. It's this particular band of culture and language,
right,
onto itself. But you've captured the ironicness, the hilarity, the contradictions, and also the lawlessness. And some people live outside the boundaries in so many ways, and you lay that out there in your family. You don't spare them much in this book.
No, I didn't. What I was really trying to, I mean, it didn't start out this way, but ultimately what started to come into focus was sort of the division or duality in the psyche that happens with people that grow up there, where you're not part of this world, you're not part of that world. So if you like start getting in trouble in this world, you just kind of jump to the other side, or you know, vice versa. And as regard to my family and it wasn't that I was unkind to them exactly. I just told the truth. You know, I told.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to tell the truth about your
family. I know. And what I tell people is that I took the sort of French approach, and I decided to tell the story and ask for forgiveness later rather than permission up front, because I would not have received the permission, because those are tough stories.
Yeah. And so your mother has not read the book.
She has not. It's too painful for her. It really is, and I didn't press her, and also I don't think she just doesn't have the time.
So you were I mean, tell me how you describe the book to somebody. Says, hey, I wrote a book. Tell me about your book. And how do you capsulize it to them, what you wrote?
That's a tough one because it's a sprawling story. I do describe it as a coming of age story because there is a type of chronology to it. But I do a lot of flashing forward and flashing back, like sometimes even within the same sentence. But it's a story. I try to describe it as a story of immigration and reinvention in modern America.
Like first generation immigrants,
first and second generation, also because my grandmother and father were the first generation. My mother was second generation, so my siblings and I are like two and a half because dad's one and mom's two, and what eventually ends up happening is I start sort of framing that into a larger context and seeing that the story is not particular to the Mexican border, that it's exactly the story that, you know, Martin Scorsese and I keep forgetting. God, I always forget this guy's name. The guy who did The Godfather.
Francis Ford.
Thank you, Francis Ford. I just have a block because of his daughter. I can't stand what she does. Those stories about immigration and integration, it's like, you know, The Godfather starts with like the baptism of the third generation in there, and then the conflict and all the rest of that. And the principles are exactly the same. It's just, you know, the costumes are different and, you know, the hats and the food.
So, but, you know, you're in a family where it's a unit where you're not nurturing is not the word that I would use.
it really, when I started writing the story, I got the sense that children were at that time and at that socioeconomic level, children were really seen as livestock. They were a commodity that were traded. And they were used to benefit, you know, the larger family. They were not allowed to have childhoods. We were not allowed to. My brother and I were not allowed to have childhoods. We were, as soon as we were able to do work, we were woken up at the crack of dawn and forced to do work.
Right, and work could be anything from what?
Well, in our particular case, my grandfather owned a trucking business, so we were changing tires, changing oil, you know, and the equipment was always, you know, on the brink of utter collapse. And so, you know, plugging radiators and just companionship, just, you know, being in the front seat and doing a day's work with our fathers because they needed my dad, you know, always needed somebody there with him. Could not be alone, that man. I never understood that. But we were.
You're doing that, and then something weird happens. Something happens. Your stories are very compelling. They grab you. You know,
something always happens.
And it's this interesting how you were working in a print shop. You know, you got away. You go to Seattle, work in a print shop.
Yeah.
And the story is now how you became to write this memoir and how it became a national sensation.
Yes.
So we're gonna get to that. More with Domingo Martinez talking about his book, The Boy Kings of Texas, a memoir of growing up in the Rio Grande Valley in Brownsville and what happened to him. Give us a call, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX.
Good afternoon, it's 3:15, I'm Steve Short. There's a report of an accident on northbound I-35 at George Beach. Also watch out for a collision reported on the southeast side on eastbound Loop 410 at Roosevelt.
KSTX traffic is made possible by rentatoyotasanantonio.com. Support for KSTX comes from Texas Natural Gas Now, working every day to power Texas homes, businesses, and vehicles. Learn more at texasnaturalgasnow.com. Have you ever told a friend, "I heard this story on TPR today"? Now you don't have to wait to share your favorite stories. Use our one-click social media buttons to post stories to Facebook or Twitter. Sharing the best of Texas Public Radio is just a click away on tpr.org.
Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. where in the next half hour, we're going to be speaking with Sheriff Susan Parmalo. But right now, we have Domingo Martinez, and we're discussing his book, The Boy Kings of Texas. So, Domingo, anything you say, make sure the statute of limitations is expired, because the sheriff will be coming in here soon. Right. And our phone lines are open. You can give us a call. If you read the book, if you heard about the book, give us a call, 614-8980. You can also email questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. A lot of people are like, oh, my God, there's profanity in this book. Domingo, how could you?
Well, that part was easy, because I just ultimately just transcribed the stories as I would have told them at a one-on-one at a bar. And that's ultimately how I describe it. It's like this incredibly long conversation had over drinking in a dark bar. And I tell stories like my sister's. When they were in middle school, they decided that they didn't know Spanish. They really wanted to get away from their more Mexicano sort of background, and we all just sort of started playing along with them, and they dyed their hair like completely blonde and started like dressing in very fancy fashions. And my mother played along with it too, because you know they wouldn't have been able to do it otherwise. And they started calling it, instead of, you know, one was named Margarita Martinez, the other Maria de los Angeles. They just kind of transformed that into Mimi, and they just started calling each other Mimi and pretending they didn't know Spanish.
I would call those the Rio Grande Valley girls.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. I hadn't quite looked to that. And the rest of us were actually just completely ignored. But all of a sudden, you know, my sisters became completely glamorous and drawing all the attention. And no one actually questioned it. It was a very odd 2 years.
And then they had sort of a confrontation as this new identity that they've adopted wasn't really authentic.
My father's decided that he reverted back to his more farming roots and like shipped off his family to California, sort of on a migrant vacation, to work the grape fields the Coachella Valley. I think it was where we were at. And we did that for like 2 years in order to sort of help him out through a tough spot, and then it completely sort of destroyed this idea of glamour in my sister's life, and they came back completely like humbled. And it was very sad.
So it's interesting. It's not an uncommon story. There's always seems to be a time in someone in your life when you grow up in South Texas, and you have to try and figure out, how do I sync up with this Brady Bunch image that's on TV? And I don't live like that, but I want that. Is that accessible to me?
Right.
Is that off limits to me? How do I fit that into my identity? And, you know, and that's kind of it's not an uncommon theme. It's something that happens in a lot of Latin American, Latino literature. But your book has not really been branded as Latino literature. It's interesting to me that you're kind of, you're in that world, but you're not in that world. You don't reference that. You don't write like that. But the themes are there. The characters are there.
Correct. I really did want to break out of that model simply because I did grow up reading that type of Chicano literature. But it never really, again, being caught between the two worlds of like what was being piped in on television and what I was really experiencing. None of these particular qualities actually applied to me. You know, I was stuck somewhere in between. And so when I started telling these stories, yes, there are these themes and ideas that are coming out from the subject of Latino integration, but that's not how I thought. That's not how, you know, I didn't think in terms of, I always identified first as an American, and then secondly, as a Texan, and then thirdly, as a Mexican-American. And so it was through that metric that I kind of they started writing this. And, you know, while I absorbed some Latino literature, it didn't directly apply to me. And so I wanted to push that model forward when I was writing this story, is that I didn't want to be primarily identified as a Chicano or Latino writer. In fact, my next book actually kind of moves a little bit away from that in order to sort of make that point. And I probably will return back to it because I've been having tremendous support and identification with the other Latino writers. In fact, I just did a conference in San Marcos at Texas State the border riders. And at first, I accepted it, the invitation, because I was friends with the moderator, Richard Santos. But while we were there, and when the discussion really started to take off, I realized, that's me, that's me too, and also that's the way that the rest of America actually can see me. That's the way they that's how they're able to frame my work. It's like it's in a context that they can't understand otherwise, so they have to put me into the Latino category.
So, but you're also writing frequently through the eyes of a child who is not getting a lot of supervision and nurturing and all the things that you want children to have. Do you, is there a voice there, somebody saying that this is real, this happens, we do need to address these issues?
I didn't write the book to make the...
I mean, it's not an issues-driven book. You're not trying to send a message like not Western Union. But
correct.
These are real things that happen to a real kid in Texas, you know, and do we want that? We don't want that happening.
No, of course not. You certainly don't want the no one wants to, you know, to neglect their children, especially children who are asking or demanding for some attention and support. But it wasn't the original intention. In fact, the book wasn't intended as therapy. It wasn't intended as a platform. It wasn't intended as a social issues book. It was simply intended to tell the story. Ultimately, I wanted to sort of update Huckleberry Finn, I suppose, you know, and with sort of a Southwestern style. And that's good. I just wanted to tell the story. And then other people have applied their personal meanings and their personal identifications to it. And I think that's, you know, the definition of art. You put it out there and then other people tell you what they see in it. And I've received a lot of that. I've had people try to hug me, you know.
Well, you're a huggable guy.
Thank you.
So
pudgy.
You're working as a print shop and you're writing this book first time. So how much writing success had you had up until this point?
Well, for clarification, I was a graphic designer working in publishing. And by that, I mean newspapers, alternative weeklies, magazines and stuff. But that industry imploded, as everyone knows. And as our resources dried up, I needed to sort of make a decision whether I wanted to stick to plan A, which was always to be a writer, and plan B was to be a graphic designer and support myself. That kind of didn't work out. Excuse me. And so I ended up writing at night when I'd come home, frustrated from my days, basically being humiliated constantly at work for like a really lower wage that I just wasn't making. And I wasn't thriving by any sort of imagination. The only sort of resolve that I had was to go home, once, twice, three times a week and just sit there and start working on this book. And I did this for about anywhere from, I used the numbers between like 15 and 20 years. I mean, because it's they've been in that constant operation. The Mimes, that story alone, that was one of the first ones. And that's easily able to buy a round of drinks. You know, it's like 22 years old at this point. So
you're doing that. You write the book, and what kind of publishing credentials do you have?
None.
No short stories.
Nothing.
Nothing. No
just,
Flannery O'Connors. No,
no
nothing.
No, I just stuck it out, and I just kept doing it with this just pig-headed willingness to continue, you know, getting to. I started. Sending samples out. I think about 8 years ago. And I had nobody to go to. I had no mentors. I had no.
So you were not in the club.
No, absolutely outside of the club.
Because it is very clubby.
I'm figuring that out now because like I keep getting invited to these forums and these readings, and it's like, wow, you all know each other. You know, it's hi, I'm Domingo. You know, and but this whole time, I bought a book on Amazon. It was a directory of literary publications. And it just started in the A's, you know. It's like a triple A.
Did you subscribe to like Reader's Writer's Digest magazine? And
no, but because I couldn't afford to buy them.
Yes, and so but you got it published, But the National Book Award finalist, that is an amazing accomplishment.
That I will give credit to my agent, because she knew the industry so well that she understood that this book was not going to just fly off the shelf. Excuse me. It was not going to make the sort of impression that it was going to have a hard time breaking out. So she contractually obligated our publisher to apply for every large award available to it. She knew that with the nature of this book, that you can't just really describe it. You can't put it into a context and say, you know, it's John Grisham, you know. So she decides to go for the awards to get the critical appraisal. That if we could get it on the right desks, you know, and get read by the right people, that perhaps, you know, it has a shot. And so so she makes it a part of our contract with this publisher. I have no idea what any of this is about. I'm like, sure, of course, perfect, great strategy. You know,
right. And so you almost win, not quite.
No,
it was one of those painful almost.
Oh,
there.
Boy.
It's like you're at the Oscars and you don't get it. But now it's been picked up by to be Selma Hayek.
She's
going to make it a weekend movie or something.
She's positioning it to HBO first. She wants to make a series out of it because there's a lot in the book, and she doesn't want to reduce it to, if it was turned into a feature film, we'd have to select the 100 best pages and do that. And she wants, there's so much to it that she wants to really
be like Sopranos
it.
On the border.
I'm hoping so.
You know, that'd be great. Yeah. So, and did you meet Ms. Hayek?
I did. We had lunch in Seattle. That was an interesting 2 hours. I was very nervous, as you can imagine. And she impressed me as one of the most intelligent and interesting human beings I've ever met in my life, obviously. But her acumen in being able to break apart a story, she just sat there with a piece of paper. You know, it was one of those tablecloths that you can write on.
All tablecloths.
Well, you know, with the right crayon, any crayon, right? But she did. She just broke it apart and said, you know, that we could do it this way, that way. And I just watched her take this story that I've been working on for 20 years and tell me things about it that I didn't know that were dynamics that were happening.
Because it is basically a series of vignettes.
Correct.
The short stories and coming together and taking you there. And so it would be, I mean, just to think, like you mentioned earlier, how exciting it was when you were a kid growing up in the Valley, how somehow on national TV, your area gets mentioned for something that's not a disaster, and everyone's happy. And then, to be responsible for being able to tell the story of that region on a format that will bring it to life and tell it in a realistic fashion. I mean, does that give you a charge?
I'm more frightened than anything else, because it's a heck of a lot of responsibility.
All right. Well, the book is fantastic. I enjoyed it. I recommend it. Domingo Martinez, author of The Boy Kings of Texas, a memoir. There's more source coming up in the second half hour. Sheriff Susan Pomelo will be joining us as we talk about what's happening with the jail and her job. You're listening to The Source on KSTX.